Welcome to episode 515 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. I'm Peter Anderson. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. Revelation 2 verses 12 to 17 continues with the third of seven messages to the churches of Asia Minor, modern day Turkey, during the Apostle John's time. Each of these messages includes a specific word to a specific church, but there are also lessons applicable to the lives of believers today. This third letter is to the believers in Pergamon, or Pergamos, which was a beautiful art-filled city built along two tributaries of the Caicos River. Pergamon was a center for the worship of Dionysus, Zeus, and other pagan gods. First, Jesus affirms the church's positive actions. Revelation 2 verse 13, I know where you live, where Satan has his throne. Yet you remain true to my name. You did not renounce your faith in me, even in the days of Antipas, my faithful witness, who was put to death in your city where Satan lives. The Pergamon believers lived in a difficult place, surrounded by pagan influences, yet they held to Christ's name and did not deny him during difficult times. One Christian in Pergamon, named Antipas, is mentioned as a faithful witness. Church tradition says that Antipas was a physician suspected of secretly propagating Christianity. The Aesculapians, members of the medical guild, accused Antipas of disloyalty to Caesar. Upon being condemned to death, Antipas was placed inside a copper bowl, which was then heated over a fire until it was red hot. The church was not perfect, however, and Jesus took note of their sin. Revelation 2 verses 14 to 15. Nevertheless, I have a few things against you. You have people there who hold to the teaching of Balaam, who taught Balak to entice the Israelites to sin by eating food sacrificed to idols and by committing sexual immorality. Likewise, you also have those who hold to the teaching of the Nicolaitans. The teaching of Balaam is explained in this context as Christians eating food that had been sacrificed to idols, religious compromise, and committing sexual immorality, moral compromise. The original Balaam's deceitful work is described in Numbers 25 verses 1 to 3 and Numbers 31 verses 15 to 16. The Nicolaitans are mentioned only in this letter and in the letters of the Ephesian church. They were likely a group similar to those who held the teachings of Balaam, though the exact nature of their doctrine and practice is unknown. Jesus then issues a clarion call to repent of their sin in Revelation 21 verse 6. Repent therefore. The Lord hates religious and moral compromise. He calls the people to live differently. His people, his church, are to be peculiar. In the rest of this verse, Jesus notes the judgment that would take place if the church of Pergamon did not repent. I will soon come to you and will fight against them with the sword of my mouth. The Nicolaitans and those who were teaching Balaam's error would be destroyed, along with their followers from the congregation at Pergamon. Jesus desires purity among his people, and we have a responsibility to remove false teachers from the church. Jesus makes a final promise to the believers at Pergamon in verse 17. To him who overcomes, I will give some of the hidden manna. I will also give him a white stone with a new name written on it, known only to him who receives it. The three blessings are hidden manna, a white stone, and a new name. Manna was a welcome source of food to the Israelites during their journey through the desert en route to Canaan. The overcomers at Pergamon refuse to eat food offered to idols, but they will enjoy bread from heaven. The feast Jesus prepares for his faithful servants exceeds by far anything the devil offers us. In the ancient world, the use of a white stone had many associations. A white stone could be a ticket to a banquet, a sign of friendship, evidence of having been counted, or as a sign of acquittal in a court of law. Jesus may have any one of these meanings in mind, but at the very least we know that it has the assurance of blessing. What is the meaning of this new secret name promised to him who overcomes? Is it God's name, or is it the believer's name? This is probably the believer's new name, and the name itself is probably more important than the stone on which it is written. In Revelation 2 verses 18 to 29, Jesus sends his message to the church of Thyatira. The name Thyatira means continual sacrifice, perhaps prefiguring the character of the Christian church in years to come. Thyatira was a wealthy inland city on the Lycus River in Asia Minor. It was known for its trade guilds, especially the Dyer's Trade Guild. The city's water, combined with a red pigment from the roots of certain herbs, produced a brilliant red that was conducive to dyeing fabrics. Lydia, who became a believer in Philippi, was from Thyatira and sold purple material. Residents of Thyatira worshipped Apollo, the sun god, under the surname Tirimnas. Apollo was a son of the chief Greek god Zeus. As such, it is significant that Jesus identified himself to the church at Thyatira as the Son of God. Verse 18, "And to the angel of the church in Thyatira write, the words of the Son of God, who has eyes like a flame of fire, and whose feet are like burnished bronze." Not only is Jesus the Son of God, but also his deity outshines the sun by far, so the church of Thyatira could view him as far more glorious than Tirimnas. After identifying himself, Jesus affirms the church's positive actions. "I know your deeds, your love and faith, your sacrifice and perseverance, and that you are now doing more than you did at first." Five qualities are listed in Revelation 2 verse 19. Love, faith, service, patient endurance, and greater works. Next, in Revelation 2 verse 20, Jesus notes their sin. "Nevertheless, I have this against you. You tolerate that woman Jezebel, who calls herself a prophetess. By her teaching, she misleads my servants into sexual immorality and the eating of food sacrificed to idols." Apparently, a false prophetess was leading believers into compromise. The church was engaging in sexual immorality and dabbling in idolatry. It is possible, as we have discussed before, that Jezebel was her real name, but it is more likely the name was a metaphorical reference to the Jezebel of the Old Testament, another idolatrous woman who opposed God's ways. Rather than rebuke this false teacher and put her out of the church, the believers in Thyatira were allowing her to continue her deception. Jesus pronounces judgment on this Jezebel and calls the church of Thyatira to repent of their sin. Revelation 2 verses 22 to 23, "I will cast her on a bed of suffering and will make those who commit adultery with her suffer intensely unless they repent of her ways. I will strike her children dead." Then Jesus encourages those who had remained faithful. Verses 24 to 25, "Now I say to the rest of you in Thyatira, to you who do not hold to her teaching and have not learned Satan's so-called deep secrets, I will not impose any other burden on you. Only hold on to what you have until I come." The faithful believers did not fall into Satan's trap, and they only needed to remain faithful until Christ's return. Jesus lists his promises to the believers in Thyatira, verses 26 to 28. "To him who overcomes and does my will to the end, I will give authority over the nations. He will rule them with an iron scepter. He will dash them to pieces like pottery. Just as I have received authority from my Father, I will also give him the morning star." These blessings would include authority over the nations, victory over all enemies, and the morning star. The morning star is Jesus himself, as Revelation 22 verse 16 reveals. Jesus will give himself to his church, and they will fellowship together forever. Father, help us to be known for love, faith, service, patient endurance, and holding fast to Christ, and help us not to compromise in any way. That's our episode. Remember that God calls you not only to live, but to thrive. Live life to the full today.